Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh please. Come on, Lisa, are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that this ain't like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello, and welcome to edition number 452 of Strange Days Indeed. Many interestings in this edition. We have Dave Perlot with his take on it. Our space correspondent and former co-host of this program, Michael J. Woods, will join us, and we'll talk about those strange objects that supposedly are lurking up above this planet in and around the neighborhood of the International Space Station. And then we'll talk with the man whose name and blog were the username and password in November for both Strange Days Indeed, the podcast, and the UFO Updates email list online archive access. Billy Cox, journalist, blogger, and mostly interested in the things that interest you and I. And winding things up, Alfred Lemberg. Strange Days Indeed, number 452.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Perlot.
There's an interesting thread on the UFO Updates list that begins with the Arnold case solved. And the original poster sounds somewhat mystified because he managed to solve the 60-year-old mystery by simply consulting a book that shows a nice picture of a flight of B-47s near Mount Rainier, Washington. The poster, John Rimmer, was surprised because the photograph was taken by Boeing aircraft to show off their brand new bomber and try and drum up some sales for that aircraft. What he found most surprising was that the camera plane that took the promotional photo didn't manage to get any photographs of the 9 flying discs that Kenneth Arnold reported seeing. Of course, he answered that by suggesting that perhaps whatever images were shot by the camera plane were confiscated and everybody involved was sworn to secrecy. Now, when I first read that post, I found it equally amazing that nobody ever came forward with such an easy solution to a mystery that has been ongoing for such a long time. If the 9 discs were in fact Boeing B-47 bombers on some kind of test flight, that would have made magnificent advertising for Boeing, and they would have been on that like white on rice. Hey, those were our bombers that Kenneth Arnold saw. Those are some pretty advanced aircraft, huh, Ken? Boeing is pleased to announce our brand new aircraft that appears to be out of this world to anyone that sees it. Now, those of us involved in the ufological community can finally take a breath and put a salt stamp on the Arnold sighting incident and go on about our lives working on other mysteries, like why is it that gray aliens like strawberry ice cream so much? Or can we? Now see, there are all kinds of little tiny problems that keep cropping up with B-47s being what Kenneth Arnold saw that fateful day, June 24th, 1947. And, well, I kind of decided to do a top 10 reasons that those craft could not have been Boeing B-47s on a test flight. Reason number 10. When an aircraft is produced, there are only one or two test aircraft built because the bugs need to be worked out before any number of aircraft are built. Therefore, there's simply not 9 B-47s available for a photograph. Number 9. Boeing aircraft didn't say a word about the very famous Arnold UFO report being a mistaken identity situation. Number 8. When Kenneth Arnold landed, he didn't assume that what he saw was a flight of flying saucers. He assumed that he might have actually seen some experimental military aircraft. Number 7. The U.S. Army Air Force investigated the report by Arnold because it is their job to know about everything that is flying in U.S. airspace, and, they didn't really want to lose their jobs. Number 6. Kenneth Arnold estimated the speed of the objects was somewhere in the area of 1,500 miles per hour, slightly over double the speed of sound. Number 5. Well, you see, the sound barrier wasn't broken until October 14, 1947 by Chuck Yeager, and he didn't go anywhere close to double the speed of sound. Number 4. The maximum speed for a Boeing B-47 was 604 miles per hour, a far cry from the speed of sound. Number 3. No matter how you cut it or how you view a Boeing B-47, there is no way that it can take on the shape of a half moon or crescent-shaped craft, as Arnold explained seeing. Number 2, Kenneth Arnold mentioned seeing two different type of craft in the 9 that he saw. And finally, the number 1 answer why Boeing B-47s could not possibly have been the objects that Kenneth Arnold saw on June 24, 1947, is that the maiden test flight of the Boeing B-47 did not take place until December 17, 1947, almost 6 months after Kenneth Arnold reporting seeing the strange objects. Now, there are very few things in ufology that can be stated conclusively beyond a shadow of a doubt as being one thing or the other. And I always get very excited whenever I come across one. In this instance, I almost can't control myself because I'm so excited. See, I really can't state with 100% certainty what it was that Kenneth Arnold saw on June 24, 1947, but I can conclusively state that he did not see a flight of Boeing B-47 bombers because they simply didn't exist on that particular day in history. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Fermont, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Good one, Dave, as always.
Thank you.
Actually, there have been several different variations of what it was that Kenneth Arnold saw over the years that have surfaced. Dave Rudiak, one of the regular contributors to UFO Updates and an occasional contributor to this program, posted an interesting back on the 11th of December where he says, here's an article I stumbled across from the Hood River News, Hood River, Oregon, on Friday, July the 18th, 1947. In it, a witness claims to have viewed through binoculars a large mothering several small planes.
Mm-hmm.
Hood River is about 30 miles due south of Mount Adams, where Arnold said he saw the objects disappear. And the article says, several residents of Hood River Valley shortly after 7 p.m. on July 16th, the Wednesday, thought that at last they had definitely seen flying saucers when they noticed a group of flashing objects traveling swiftly from east to west high in the air of the Middle Valley. A few seconds later, a few noticed a large plane behind and above the flashing objects. Willis Doc Eby and his daughter and the editor of the news apparently saw them about the same moment, and later the news editor turned a pair of binoculars on the flashing objects, only to discover they were small planes, five of them, traveling at high speed and apparently mothered by a large plane above and behind them. Had the high-powered glasses not been available to identify the objects, it's probable that another flying saucer story would have been written, and two more local people would have been in line to be accused of seeing things. For at first glance, they could have accepted as flying saucers. The final paragraph says the Army now reports it is experimenting with small planes to take off from the bomb bay of a four-motored giant plane, while the Navy has been using radio-controlled drone planes for several years. Which of these were seen Wednesday evening by at least five Valley residents is not known. When did Arnold see his UFOs?
June 24th.
Well, this was July 16th, so it wasn't what Arnold reported either.
No. The thing is, again, anything that remotely resembles an aircraft, I would suspect that he didn't just watch this and get a glimpse of it. He watched it for some time. So it would be a situation where I think if it remotely resembled any kind of aircraft that we are familiar with, the wings, the tails, he would have immediately clued into that. But one of the things that he specifically stated was he did not see any of the tail, like the typical tail of an aircraft. And that's one way you sort of got to go, ooh, okay. It's like seeing a car with no wheels. That's one of the things you immediately sort of go, hey, wait a sec. That's one of the main reasons that we take his sightings so seriously.
Yeah.
Is the fact that he could not identify it as any type of aircraft.
I take his word for it,
rather
than any of these fatuous explanations that people keep on coming up with.
Or the infamous pelicans.
Yeah.
Those are some fast-moving pelicans
down there. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. 400 miles an hour, huh? Yeah, I've seen pelicans fly at that speed.
And I just kind of found it funny that somebody had found a promotional photograph of B-47s. Because in any situation like that, if they've got a promo photograph of a flight of nine B-47s, that meant that those aircraft were in production for a while.
Yeah, or somebody had been cheating in the darkroom.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously cheating.
Yes.
It would have been quite the exposure, to say the least.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get more explanations of what Kenneth Arnold saw.
Oh, for sure. There's no question whatsoever.
Anything else you want to cover?
Not yet. There's some other things on the list you're going to hear in my next take.
I look forward to your next take, Dave. I know that what's been going on the last couple of days on the list will undoubtedly attract your attention. And we will get into some of that with Michael J. Woods. Bye, Dave. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
To be a co-host on this program a few years ago. Michael J. Woods is now our space reporter. And Mike joins us on the line from his home in Toronto, where he has a nice new shiny silver PT Cruiser with the license plates UFO guy on it. Mr. Happy, huh, Mike Woods?
Oh, very pleased.
Well, I guess.
Well, of course, it's worth pointing out that the reason I was able to afford such a comfortable new ride was because I gave up cigarette smoking, and I managed to arrange a deal where my payments for my car matched what I used to spend on cigarettes, a reward for my giving it up.
Congratulations on giving it up. Yeah,
thank
you. Yeah. There's some interesting things happening space-wise in the last few days or so.
Well, all sorts of things, and it just shows you, if you dig beneath, even just dip slightly below the surface, how interconnected things are in the UFO world. Hard work of the honest researchers as well as the wallet raiding of the hucksters. And we seem to have a case in point here. Now, I'm a regular surfer over to the Rents.com site. At one point in time, I considered it one of the premier UFO sites on the web. And I currently think it's more a home of, or let's just say that some of his contributors probably feel most comfortable wearing brown shirts while they're writing their drivel. Seems to be an awful lot of people who are convinced that everything, including their neighbor's dog having a poo on their lawn, is a conspiracy that's going to drive us to one world government, the new world order, black helicopters, barcodes on our foreheads, and then, okay, enough, I give us a break. However, I went to Rents the other day, because sometimes, of course, some of this stuff is so far out there, you almost hurt yourself laughing. And I came across something that definitely wiped the smirk off my face. Because I have a tendency to, I will take anything at face value, I'll reflect on it for a couple of days, then I'll start digging into it. And this one for me was a beaut. If you happen to surf over to Rents.com, it's titled, Big Machines Parked in Orbit, Black Ops, Star Wars, or E.T., or all of the above. It features video captures from some video punitively shot through a telescope using a video camera and a proprietary device, the nature of which is never quite revealed. The copyright being held by one John Leonard Walson, and Leonard is spelled L-E-N-A-R-D. Evidently his Ma and Pa didn't get quite far enough out the trailer park to get the spelling right on Leonard. The first image is supposedly through this telescope, and it shows the International Space Station. Frankly, it does look like the International Space Station. It looks like a fuzzy, interestingly lit space station. And frankly, when I rolled some of the video that you can click onto on this website, some of the stuff was pretty convincing. The movement on it is convincing. The harshness of sunlight in space seems to be there. And so I had one of those moments where I spat coffee all over my computer monitor, and then I had to wipe it off, look all embarrassed. Now I've had the 24 hours, and I've had a few updates when I posted this on UFO Updates. Evidently, there's a whole bunch of hucksters and questionable characters associated with this. These images come from a website that's now posted something in the neighborhood of 40 episodes of something called Far Above Space and Time. There's a gentleman by the name of Santiago who has revealed himself on UFO Updates as being the sole person who knows who John Leonard Walson is. Well, okay. Involved in all of this is a gentleman well-known in UFO circles, Jose Escamilla, who came forward about 12, 14 years ago with the Rods discovery. I'm not going to go into it. Do an archive search on UFO Updates.
That's the Roswell rods.
The Roswell rods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Santiago, who is saying that it's not a world exclusive and it's possibly a hoax, who knows? He's involved in it as well. I found on another UFO-related forum that, in fact, the three of them are in a tug of war over royalties, and it may in part involve that thing that was posted and punted, UFO is the greatest story ever denied. Like evidently, I don't know about the UFO story was denied, but this video certainly got two thumbs down from members of the UFO Updates list. Anyway, at first glance, if anyone has ever tried to look at any object through a telescope, the jerkiness, the motion, if you're not using really top-flight equipment, was there. The strange illumination that you observe, geez, even when they're beaming us down, you know, the astronauts working in space, that kind of harsh sunlight appears to be in some of this video. And so it can be quite compelling. However, the things that start to pop up, besides the fact that John Leonard Walson, or whoever his name is actually a guy who lives in England with a sick wife, and there's all this backstory to this guy, he's not revealing anything at all about the proprietary device that allows him to capture these images of these enormous devices that look for all the world like other spaceships. Enormous. Spaceships. Spaceships bigger than the International Space Station. Spaceships that are in orbit. Well, if it's real, you could ask yourself, whose are they? If they're ours, you could ask, how'd you pay for them? I think the line from the movie Independence Day covers that one nicely. Do you really think the Air Force pays $380 for a toilet seat. Do you really think they pay $900 for a hammer? Okay. Now, on the other side, third image reproduced on the Rents website in regards to big machines parked in orbit shows one big mothering large object of cylindrical extended cylinder would be the nicest way to put it. And then two smaller objects below it. Well, you know what? I'm sorry, but damned me if these things don't look like Klingon birds of prey to me. Okay? Fuzzy, out of focus, Klingon birds of prey. Okay, so that's the first one. I suppose you could take an image of the International Space Station and fuzz it up. It would have to be an image taken from the shuttle. Those things tend to be kind of crystal clear because they're using really good cameras. But if you fuzzed it and ran it through a bunch of masks and blurs and all that, I suppose you could get this thing. How the hell you would do the motion that it shows in the video? I don't know. I haven't got all the answers. All I've got is a whole lot of questions. But if you wanted to have a little fun with yourself, then I strongly recommend you go over there, take a look at this. Until we know how he does it, with what, we don't know if we're looking at shots of spacecraft models that were blurred and run through Photoshop. We don't know what we're looking at here, but it is rather interesting. And so I strongly recommend it.
One of the questions that Dave and I discussed a little while ago was, look at how many shuttle trips it took to get the International Space Station constructed.
Exactly.
And if those other objects are ours,
mm-hmm. When the heck did we build them?
And how many shuttles did it take to build those? And how can you launch a shuttle without anybody noticing?
Pretty tough to pull it off. You've got to come up with alternative shuttle launching sites in isolated spots. But supplying a shuttle in an isolated spot is kind of a no-go. You need a huge technological base to launch a shuttle.
Yeah.
And if they're not ours, personally, I don't think so.
Ah.
But if they're real and they're not ours, then whose are they? And since they're great, honking, huge, enormous things that all look to be larger than the International Space Station, it would behoove us to be very polite to whomever has dropped those into our orbit. Like I say, I don't believe this for a second. I think we're looking at some pretty interesting stuff, but it could be, as I said, out-of-focus models. It could be electronic discharges. There's a lot of things it could be, but I'm having a real hard time these days swallowing that it's an enormous spacecraft in orbit above Earth. Prove me wrong. I'm willing. The first novel I wrote was based on the premise that I looked at that STS one with the curved Earth, the UFO footage. The whole premise there was, well, what if there was a war going on in Earth orbit and nobody told us about it?
There could be anything going on in Earth orbit, like these supposed objects that this guy has...
And, you know, when we say, well, you can't launch shuttles in secrecy and blah, 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 oh, really? The Americans bombed the living crap out of Cambodia for 3 months, and the only ones who knew about it were the Cambodians.
Well, there's that to it, too.
Bombing's a pretty public thing.
But even when they've launched spy satellites using shuttles, NASA have come out and said, hey, we're doing this, or yes, we did this. That's why you saw a shuttle taking off.
Hey, I'm not playing devil's advocate on this stuff. I just say it looks weird, right? But if I continue to push it, then let's see. I would say NASA told us this was going to the space station. I didn't actually look in the cargo hatch. How about you?
No.
You know, if you want to be paranoid, let's be paranoid, right? Okay, let's be paranoid. There's somebody peeking in my window, Errol.
Yeah, let's talk flying bananas over this guy's house and various other things.
Well, that's the other side of it, is that all of a sudden this guy appears to be on a direct flight path to just every form of military helicopter that the UK has, including the a nice shingle-lifting visit from a Chinook twin rotor that looks like it was coming down to unload right in his backyard. That is interesting. Coincidence? I don't know where the guy lives.
I talked to John Velez yesterday.
Oh, yeah? What'd John have to say?
We were talking about the Chinooks, and he said, well, you know, there's a Chinook being flying over our house in Pennsylvania, and we live miles from anywhere military, and there has been a Chinook flying around their valley on a fairly regular basis. including flying right over the top of their house.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Has he caught where it's from or anything?
Harassment from military helicopters. Yeah. Where have we heard that story?
Never heard that one before.
No?
No, that's new one on me. I've never heard stuff like that before.
I never heard of UFOs either, huh?
No. And I still believe in that guy in the red suit, you know, with the white beard.
Yes. Coming soon to a chimney near
you. I know he's real because he keeps bringing me visa bills every January.
The rovers are still going strong up on Mars, aren't they, Mike Woods?
You know, if there is anything we can take, and we can, you and I can't take zero credit for this, but as a species, boy, we have our moments. The Martian rovers are hunkering down because guess what? Much like outside my own window at this moment, it's turning towards winter on Mars. And they are now nearly approaching the 48th month of the three-month mission. It's month 47 right now for the two rovers. Seems to have found yet more indications of not just water, but hot water on Mars. In that the broken wheel on Spirit revealed a patch of almost pure silica. That's the main ingredient in glass. Basically, there's only two ways it could have been created, and that's either through a hot spring environment or an environment called a fumarole, in which acidic steam rises through cracks. And on Earth, both of these types of settings, hold on to your pantyhose, teem with microbial life. Right now, they're hunkering down for winter. There's a wonderful picture on the NASA website, the rover's dedicated website. And it was taken by Spirit of itself using its panoramic camera on the mast. There's so much dust on the solar collectors, you cannot tell where the landscape stops and the rover begins.
There is a mystery right there, huh? Where is that rover getting its juice from?
Now, because of the dust layer, it's down to about 29% efficiency, getting very close to critical.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some real concern it may not make it out this winter, but there's been some real concerns for the last four winters that it may not make it out this winter. So I'm not ready to write those puppies off until they send a final electronic equivalent of ACK.
And that's on a 90-day warranty.
Yeah, 90-day warranty, 3 months. And it's now month 47. They're pushing month 48.
It's
providing
amazing.
Significant data. Meanwhile, Opportunity has made this enormous passage as well around Victoria Crater. Done about a quarter of the thing already around the rim. Awesome. I often wonder if that might be as close to the perfect life on this planet. Go to work and see what the little robots are doing on Mars.
And be one of the lucky guys that drives them.
Yes. That was money well spent. More than justifies this machine exploration, as far as I'm concerned. Now, the enormous advantage of humans versus robots is if there was a human there, he would brush the dust off the solar collectors, which a robot can't do.
Maybe the next ones can. Windshield wipers on the solar collectors.
You hope they come up with something. But every ounce counts. Your launch costs are, what, $10,000 or something per ounce? Don't be adding windshield wipers. You know what those suckers weigh? You want a what? A washer system with a pump? Oh, yeah, okay. We'll send a fuel attendant, too.
It's certainly all been going on in space since last you were on.
There's an interesting mission now. The current crew up on the International Space Station are going to be doing a walk in the very near future to explore one of the joints that controls the angle that the solar panels sit on so that they gather energy for the International Space Station. The last mission, they discovered there was some problem there. There was metal fragments in it. It had some type of damage, and they've locked it into position. It's really critical that they get this going so that they have enough energy for the entire space station, including this European module they're bringing up in January. What they're going to be looking for is evidence of a meteorite strike. They think because there's multiple system failures and damage from the sensors, they believe that it got whacked by a micrometeor. I like it only because it indicates the level of it happens.
Yeah,
it's
not
something that science fiction writers come up with. The possibility of one of those blasting through the side of the space station is just as real. How many feet did it need to have been displaced before it would have hit a habitat compartment?
Well, though they do have stuff that's much better than Kevlar in the walls of the habitable sections.
Exactly. but and also patch kits every, you know, 3 inches, which is about how I'd want them. But boy, I'm telling you, you know. Years ago, I took my wife and children down to Florida, and while we were down there, we went to the Kennedy Space Center, and the astronaut doing the public meet and greet that day was Story Musgrave. Now, this guy had been up more times than anyone else, and I asked him, what's the story that the media doesn't touch that they should about the shuttle? And he told me that he'd been up 6 times, half of his mission, the shuttle returned with significant damage to a windshield because of a collision with an object in orbit.
Micrometeorites, huh?
Micrometeorites, washers, you know, space crap. know? And I thought to myself, yeah, you know, that could be rather dangerous, depending on the size of the object you strike.
Well, indeed, yeah.
Because when you're doing 23,000 miles an hour, that's no joke. And that's about it.
And a fine it you have contributed once again.
Well, I thank you, sir. I'm just waiting now for the next level of fighting over the big machines in orbit, and I'm sure there's going to be one.
Well, yeah, I don't know whether it'll happen on UFO updates or not.
Preferably not, actually.
Jose Escamilla and Santiago Iturria Garza are obviously having at it hammer and tongs in a very public forum, unlike UFO updates nowadays.
Yes, as well as Mr. Wolfson, who's also in there.
Oh, he's in there too?
Oh, yes, yes. At one point I was reading postings, all three threatening to reveal what each of the other had said on MP3 recordings they had of each other and email missives, and it was like, oh, Lord, this is like three little kids in the grade 2 schoolyard going, you said this, no, you said this, I got a contract, smack.
Well, send me that link, and I'll put it in the program listing for this podcast, which is 452.
You know, you got to try something with some longevity, you know, try something and stick with it.
Yeah, our 10th year is going to dawn in September of 2008.
Well, once again, I want you to seriously consider the possibility of an all-nude webcast.
Yeah, I'm all for an all-nude webcast, as long as it's audio only.
Exactly my sentiment.
Mike Woods, thank you very much, sir.
You're more than welcome.
Look forward to a ride in your PT Cruiser.
Oh, next time we're together, sir.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mike. Thanks. Those of you who pay attention to the username and password for both this program and UFO updates will recall that the last username was Billy Cox, and the password was a Tiny Earl. And if you bother to click the Tiny Earls every time you receive one as a password for both Strange Days Indeed and UFO updates, you would see that they lead you places. Well, last month's would have led you to Blog Devoid, the mainstream media's lonely UFO web blog. Billy Cox's web blog. Billy works for the Herald Tribune down there in Sarasota, Florida. I've always enjoyed reading his blog because he's one of the very few, in fact, as the banner there says on his blog, the mainstream media's only UFO weblog. He's one of the very few, as I was about to say, journalists who pays any sort of attention to what's actually going on in the field of UFO investigation and research. So I figured it was time that we had Billy back on. It had been a couple of 3 years, if not more, since Billy had been on the broadcast version of this program. So we head down to Sarasota, Florida, and Billy Cox joins us on the line. Good day, Billy.
How you doing, Errol? It's good to be here. And by the way, just to let you know, I'm not sure that I'm the only mainstream media weblog on UFOs, but I am a very lonely UFO mainstream media weblog. So
you're about the only one that I'm aware of out
there. I'd like to think there were more. That's sad if there aren't, isn't it?
It's pretty indicative of the general state of the written word, the press, as far as UFOs is concerned. It seems to myself and many others who lurk around the periphery of UFO research.
I don't know what the reasons for that are exactly. I think this has been a subject that's rich and just ripe for journalistic application. I have been following this thing for about 27 years now, and it's fascinating. It's a mystery. Sure, it's an unconventional mystery. It perhaps involves some metaphysics, but, geez, isn't that what we're all about, trying to solve mysteries? There should be a lot more aggressive reporting of this issue, and it's too bad that the major media outlets aren't doing that, and that's sort of what I'm hoping to accomplish with this weblog. I'd like to think that I'm writing for everybody, but I also would like to think that mainstream media would be a primary target for this weblog. It's not a lot of mumbo-jumbo. It's a lot of government documents. There's a lot of good evidence out there, and it's just a matter of trying to prod people up off of their desks and sofas and couches and trying to get them to look at some of the evidence and also to examine some of the flawed logic that goes into creating barriers between mainstream media and this kind of exotic subject.
Well, they have certainly had a lot of opportunity to delve recently, particularly in view of the press conference that was held at the Washington Press Club at the beginning of, or in the middle of November. It seems to me that despite being handed literally all of the information that they needed on a silver platter, not one major outlet, even a small outlet that I can remember over the last week or two, has bothered to pick up on the actual evidence that was presented at that press conference.
That's typically a pattern. Whenever you get a good UFO case or an assembly of good witnesses, you may have an initial splash of publicity. For instance, the Disclosure Conference in 2001, you had some network coverage of that. A lot of it was snarky and tongue-in-cheek, but nevertheless, there was no follow-up. Same with this situation on November the 12th in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. This was even better in that one because the witnesses were so strong. They were aviation authorities. They were generals. They were commercial and military pilots with impressive resumes. And there was another burst of publicity about it, and then it faded pretty quickly like a summer tan, except, Errol, did you see the L.A. Times editorial? I think it was yesterday.
Oddly enough, I got a notification of that article.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to log into the website. This was about a half an hour ago.
Okay.
And my ISP was down. That was up for a while, and then I had to call you, so here I am. So I haven't had the chance to read it yet.
Well, it's kind of interesting. It's the first editorial that I've seen on UFOs by a major American daily since I can't remember when. It came out in the Los Angeles Times, and again, it was a bit dismissive of the whole thing. It was centered on, obviously, the Dennis Kucinich revelation back in late October. And then it mentioned the Leslie Keynes and the Coalition for
Freedom of Information,
that initiative they put together on November the 12th. It mentioned that and was not bad, but again, they talk about the cult of UFO, which suppose that makes me a cultist if I pay attention to it. So there's still some pejorative terms that they use, but the fact that they would write about this, that they would stoop to get into the ghetto, I think is kind of significant. And hopefully this will be a trend. It's kind of like that old idea, don't care what you say as long as you spell my name right.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they'll get beyond spelling names right and start fleshing out these issues because it sure ain't going away.
Because I haven't read it, is it a particularly useful article as far as the field is concerned?
Yeah, they have it up here. I've got it in front of me. I'll just read this part. If anything keeps the cult of UFO alive, it's not the respectability of the witnesses, but the clumsy protesting too much denials of government agencies. Then they go into the Chicago Tribune nailing the FAA last year concerning the O'Hare UFO incident in November of 06. And they talk about John Podesta. He says, John Podesta, the Clinton White House chief of staff, who has never disguised his interest in flying saucers, makes the case that the government should declassify its UFO-related materials and let people have at it, a demand that is as reasonable as it is unlikely to happen, given how easily this topic can be rerouted into japery. Essentially, at the end, they're talking about, with Kucinich as a central advocate, ridicule may be unavoidable. And in the debate, Kucinich made a self-deprecating joke about moving his campaign headquarters to Roswell, New Mexico, and another one in Exeter, New Hampshire. Roswell everybody knows about, but with the easy reference to the 1965 Exeter incident, Kucinich leaves the impression that he's not just a UFO witness, he's a buff. I'll finish this. This is the last graph. Let him go on, and we suspect Kucinich will soon be expanding on the Kecksburg sightings, the Val Johnson incident, Lonnie Zamora, the Kaikoura lights, and countless other visitations from the sky that continue to sustain our nation's sense of mystery. Well, you know what? This was written by somebody who wasn't entirely a non-buff. Lonnie Zamora, Val Johnson,
yeah.
Those things are fairly obscure for mainstream media, I think.
I was going to say, boy, somebody's done their research.
Somebody's paying attention to this stuff. So I think that's kind of interesting. And, you know, I'd like to think that any role that I would have to play in it is just to keep doing a little bit of needling, just to let people know that somebody in the mainstream media is paying attention to it. I don't know how much impact or import something like this has. And I think maybe I need to have my head examined. so few payoffs in something like this.
Some of the payoff for you might be the number of reads at your blog, right?
That's a good question. I don't really know how many reads I'm getting. Not that many, to tell you the truth. We had some footage that we ran on my blog. A couple of weeks ago, there was something in kind of unusual in the skies over Venice, Florida, off the Gulf of Mexico, a late daytime sighting, and it may have a conventional explanation, but at any rate, it got something like 1,200 hits, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but for something as obscure as Devoid, it was not a bad start.
I know that there are a lot of people who have blogs who listen to this program, and I think that they should all put links to blog Devoid on their blogs.
That's nice. Thank you.
And spread the word. It takes a little while sometimes to get attention, particularly in view of being down there in the wilds of Florida. If the folks who listen to this who have blogs who do go and make that connection for their readers, it will spread. And it deserves to as well.
That's awfully nice, Errol. I appreciate it. You know, I've been really lucky here. The management has allowed me to do this. I started writing my blog back in, I guess, maybe April or May. As you say, it's very slow. And really, for this thing to take off, I need to update this blog a couple of times a day. And if I can get updates a couple of times a week, I'm lucky, because this really isn't my primary responsibility. I am a general assignment feature writer here at the Herald Tribune in Sarasota, so I have to squeeze my blog in around some of the other things that I do whenever I can. My hope when I started this blog, and I still hold out that hope, is that I can shake some of the ripe fruit off the trees. This is obviously a mecca for retirees, including military retirees, Florida I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I know there's people out there, probably in our area, who know some things that perhaps they haven't shared with the public before. I read with great interest A Witness to Roswell, which I thought was a very sad book by Schmidt and Carey. They did a really good job with that. These people are old school patriots in the sense that they abide by their security oaths, and yes, there's also a bit of fear injected into that, but you know, I'd like to think that things have changed and they can speak more freely, and that's my hope. I haven't really found any one of key import at this point, but you'll never know unless you try, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you get to write UFO-related material for the newspaper, the hard copy?
Well, that's a good question. I have not got my hands on anything that has a strong local angle. I mean, something that could really rip your eyeballs out. And that's kind of what would justify a story in the print platform, if I had a strong local angle. We've had some local personalities, I suppose, that have made my blog, but nothing that I would consider earth-shattering. So they've been very fair with me. If I do get that local angle, I certainly think I would not be discouraged from writing that for the print platform. I just don't think I've gotten there yet.
I guess it does have to have the local angle in order for the Herald Tribune to publish.
I think it's true of just about any smaller or mid-sized newspaper. I worked for 30 years at Florida Today newspaper, which is in the backyard of Kennedy Space Center. Over there, local angles worked for the print platform were a little bit easier to find. For instance, Gordon Cooper, I was lucky enough to have interviewed him a few months before he died. He came to tour one of the firing houses that put him up into space back in the 1960s. There was an anniversary. And so I was able to interview him. Also, being at the Kennedy Space Center, there are sightings from time to time, historically and contemporaneously. And I had been doing, every now and then, once in a blue moon, a story about some of the old pad rats or whatever, who back during the 50s, for instance, during the construction of Kennedy Space Center, may have seen some odd things. So in Brevard County, there is a more natural space angle to pursue. For instance, I think, forget what space shuttle mission involving the tether with the Italian device. That wasn't a local angle per se, but the fact that it had launched from Kennedy Space Center gave me the justification to pursue it. I don't think there was a local quote that I had in that story, but because it was space related and NASA related, why it was a little more easily justified to be in the print story. So it's a bit of a different situation over here in Sarasota. You just have to shake the trees a little bit harder, and that's what I continue to do. And maybe I'll be surprised by a pleasant thud on the ground someday soon.
You mentioned talking to some of the old-timers at NASA with strange stories. Did you actually get strange stories out of them?
Yeah. I talked to a fellow who worked for one of the contractors, one of the launch contractors, in the mid-1960s. He told me a story about his first couple of launches, and I think he was involved with range operations, and he started noticing during some of the unmanned rocket flights, not too long after liftoff, he would see these bogeys, these UFOs essentially on radar, and he would be flipping out, and he's telling all his colleagues at the console board, you all come look at this, you know, what are we going to do? And they just told him to relax, that this happens all the time. In fact, most of the flights have some sort of surveillance going on, but they never interfere with flight operations, so don't worry about it. It's never happened. He told me this story quite freely, and I said, are any of those people there today who are still in their jobs? I guess I wrote this story back in the 1990s, and he gave me the name of one of his supervisors who was still at his post. So I called his supervisor, and he basically laughed it off. He said, well, I don't know where he's getting that story from, but, you know, I certainly would be in a position to have known about something like that, and that just doesn't sound at all familiar to me. So first source I talked to, he says, well, I can talk freely about it because I'm not in the program anymore. He, I think, was in private business out in Houston, Texas. You know, what do you do with these things? He said, she said, it would be great to have some kind of documentation of these things, but I was led to believe that they keep these things off the books. So who knows? It's anecdotal.
So they can come up with, I love that expression, plausible deniability.
Yeah, something like that.
Dennis Kucinich, do you suppose that in his run for president of the United States with the Democratic Party, he may have had his chances, however small, damaged by the revelation in Shirley MacLaine's book that Kucinich had had a UFO experience?
Actually, the polls show that he picked up support after that. Now, when you're polling 1% and 2%, it's hard to imagine you could be damaged by anything. But his numbers after his October the 30th revelation did not go down. They, in some cases, doubled from 2% to 4%. And again, we don't know if there's a direct correlation or any correlation between what he said about UFOs and his popularity. But, you know, the question that I've been curious about. I've heard several interviews with Shirley MacLaine since she came out with the book, which mentioned his sighting, is how much of a heads up did Kucinich have? How long in advance did he know, if he knew in advance, which I can't imagine he didn't, that she had this incident in her book? Now, the question by Tim Russert was posed to Kucinich before the book came out. So it's entirely possible he never even had a chance to read it and was blindsided by this. But who knows? I doubt it. I think he probably knew this question was coming. I don't think he welcomed it. I think some people, after another UFO conference in Gaithersburg, Maryland, a few months earlier, had come out of this situation. Dana Milbank comes to mind, the Washington Post columnist. I think he asked Kucinich's press people about would he be willing to support some sort of UFO disclosure referendum or something. I think there was a consensus in the UFO seminar that Kucinich would probably be more receptive than anybody else because he had the most liberal or progressive tagline of the candidates. And Kucinich's people blew Milbank off, basically saying, essentially, come back when you have a more serious question. So I don't think Kucinich was really in a mood to handle this question, but I think he handled it pretty skillfully, to tell you the truth.
Speaking of media questions, the CNN push to have people online mail in their questions for the CNN Democratic presidential debate of a few days ago. I read an article that just blasted the CNN VP of news. There were two main questions, both of which he dropped, which were the Arnold Schwarzenegger question about whether the Terminator would come back to save us all. And then there was a question about UFOs and would there be an inquiry into UFOs?
I read that too. There was an interview in Wired magazine or their online magazine. I thought that was quite interesting too. Obviously, they were referring to Stephen Bassett. Bassett, as you know, has been lobbying for UFO disclosure for a long time.
He used to be a regular on this program.
Okay. So I suppose that the question that he'd posed to CNN, you know, his YouTube question, had gotten a heck of a lot of hits. And I'm sure that's what was being referred to.
It seemed to me that the loonies who were asking the questions about the Terminator coming back and saving us all and the Stephen G. Bassett question were lumped together as loony questions.
Well, that's true. The fellow you're referring to was David Borman, the CNN senior vice president. His inability to make distinctions between a Hollywood fantasy and something that's been fairly well documented an issue anyway, I think is kind of goes to the intellectual poverty, I suppose.
Yeah, or bankruptcy, yes.
Yeah, of people calling the shots in the news media, you know, at the very tops. And that's unfortunate. But it's not unusual to find top news executives being extremely out of touch with the American public. It's part of a long sad trend, I suppose.
The polls indicate that the American public is really interested in the topic of UFOs and is largely being ignored by all types of media, including Borman and the CNN news operation, although there was the Larry King Live and Anderson Cooper 360 covered post-press conference. But otherwise, there's not a lot of coverage other than local newspapers when something happens in their backyard.
Well, and I've made this point before, the news executives need to start taking, and this is going to sound bad, I suppose, but they need to start paying more attention to their entertainment side of their network assets. It's one of the reasons why you have History Channel or, say, ABC Peter Jennings doing their UFO specials during ratings months. Because they know people are interested in this subject material. They know this, and the entertainment side gets it. If you try to transfer any of that momentum over into the news side, and it just dissipates. There's a disconnect. There is an acknowledgement at the network level that there's great keyword consumer interest in this subject, and for them to fail to take advantage of it, to exploit that opening that could obviously mean bigger numbers, to me, that's irrational. I don't understand that.
Maybe that adds fuel to the feeling that over the years there has been a ban on UFO coverage in the media.
I think that would be a local decision. I don't think there has been a systematic ban. A lot of people, I think, and they tend to be sort of paranoid. They think that the government and the media are in cahoots, walking in lockstep to keep this whole thing buttoned down and locked away. I reject that right out of hand. I think it is a fait accompli. I think if the media doesn't cover this in a serious fashion, then the government certainly doesn't have to raise a finger to do any more disinformation or dissembling. But in terms of the media taking its orders and cue from the government on this particular issue, I don't think that's valid at all. And it's too bad. I think a lot of critics of the media have tried to make that connection, but I haven't experienced any of that. Maybe because of the level that I'm at. You know, I've worked for mid-sized newspapers all my life. I'm not privy to what happens in the inner sanctums of the upper floors, but I don't think that sort of thinking prevails. I would be very surprised if we had that sort of thinking.
Terry Hansen had helped promote that, too, I think, in his book, The Missing Times.
And I've read that. That's a pretty good book, and I think there is precedent for that theory, especially if you go back to World War II, as Terry did. Yeah, definitely. The wire services were in cahoots with military intelligence. I understand that, but I think in this age of media diversification, I think that's less and less true as time goes on. But that's a pretty good book. Terry's done a lot of good research. I respect his diligence.
To go back to the beginning of our conversation, you dropped an M word, metaphysics.
Yes.
And how did that creep into the conversation as early as it did?
Well, I think it's a catch-all phrase for things that we don't understand. If you look at magnets, for instance, that are caught, you see them suspended. They sell them as children's toys now, sort of suspended in midair. That would have been metaphysics 100 years ago. Now you can buy them for $40. So I was using that term for lack of a better word. I have made no secret of the fact that I have seen something that I could not understand back in 1979 in the backyard of Kennedy Space Center one night while walking along Cocoa Beach. Within spotting distance of the blinking red lights at the gantry towers of Kennedy Space Center. And it was so startling, it was so abrupt and so unexpected. It just caught me and two other friends flat-footed, and it made just a slight humming sound, and it was big and dark and blotted out the rest of the sky, and had three red triangular array non-oscillating lights, and it was visible for about maybe 10 seconds max before it dissolved into the night from which it came. But it was shocking in a way, and it has occupied, I guess, a disproportionate amount of shelf life in my head ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a metaphysical event? I don't know. I don't know what other word to come up with it. It's a term of convenience for me. It appeared like a machine, but there also appeared to be almost an organic and sentient quality to it. So what is it? I don't know. I'm not going to say it's, you know, some spaceship from the Pleiades. All I can tell you is this, I can only describe it. Anything beyond that is completely inferential. And as you know, in journalism, speculation is all well and good, but it can also get you into trouble, especially if you're trying to advance a position, in this case of disclosure. So that's what I'm trying to do. Metaphysics, who knows? Yeah, I didn't understand it. I have no idea what I saw.
So you could have used the word paranormal.
I could have used
place.
That.
Yeah.
Absolutely, definitely.
How do you feel about all of the things that interest both you and I and the listeners of this program? Do you get any sort of feeling at all historically about it?
I think that we have a problem on our hands. I think there is a national security issue involved. We've been fairly lucky so far, but I have read lots of the accounts, particularly of the 1975 intrusions over some of the Air Force bases, and I have read about some of the burn experiences, people having some radiation. I did some reporting back in 1983 of the Cash Landrum incident, which I thought was quite intense, and I stayed in touch with Betty Cash for a while, and I was really sorry that she died. She was such a nice, warm, sincere person who had a sighting not unlike my own, didn't know what it was, except she was subjected to radiation exposure. Now, of course, there was lots of speculation as to what this really was, maybe because it was surrounded by so many helicopters that it was a U.S. military device, as opposed to something completely, as you would say, paranormal. But unarguably, there were trace effects. There was a physical residue from that, and she and Colby Landrum and Vicki Landrum paid a price for that. But there is a paper trail that we can look at and we can examine. And that's what I think that journalism should be focusing on. We can leave the speculation to a lot of people, perhaps, who have financial stakes in this whole thing. But what I think we do best, or we should do best, is follow the evidence, follow the paper, and see where that leads us. And I would hate to speculate. I have some ideas, but no different from anybody else's. They're not really worth a whole lot. But I do think we have a problem on our hands, and I think we've been a bunch of ostriches. We've been in avoidance and denial for a long time. And it's time that this became an issue for the mainstream media. As I said earlier, Errol, this stuff, as you know, isn't going away. It's just not. And as our planet gets more crowded, I think we're going to see more of an interactive trend with whatever this stuff happens to be all about.
And more witnesses, more and more reports.
Oh, sure. And that's what the issue that was raised in the November the 12th conference was, let's reopen Project Blue Book, I think, was the bottom line of that. People need to have a place to go with this stuff. Traditionally, in the last however many years that Blue Book has been shut down, you have some private concerns. You might have NARCAP, or you might have Peter Davenport's New Fork, where it's privately done. These guys who handle and receive these citizen UFO reports, they're not getting paid any money for it. It's a pain in the rear in many cases. And, of course, so many of these cases that come in are completely prosaic. They could be planets. They could be stars, meteorological phenomena. I understand why well-intentioned people of government really don't want to have anything to do with this. But on the other hand, you have government agencies in France and England and a number of other countries where they do take citizen sightings, and they have a form for this. I think that's a good start.
Yes.
In the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good start. So obviously, the military, defense, national security studies that are ongoing, and I'm not so sure that you want to get into that right now at this point, but I think a public study with some good people on the ground floor, honest people, I think it's a good start to try to regain some momentum in getting to the bottom of what this whole phenomenon is all about.
My feeling is that if they ignore it, things like the O'Hare incident, the Japan Airlines incident, the Iranian Air Force incident, I mean, there have been all kinds of incidents over the years. And something pretty ugly is going to happen in the not-too-distant future if they continue to ignore all of that evidence and not look into it and try and figure out what it is.
Absolutely. And that's where Leslie King has been doing some of her great reporting with the airline incidents and NARCAP, because there have been incidents where pilots, unforewarned, have taken some evasive maneuvers to avoid hitting these things. And as you see, yes, we are going to have an accident, and hopefully not a catastrophic accident. But I don't think we can be complacent about this stuff. Mm. Again, the skies are getting more crowded. There's more people. We need to have better information about this. Do we have to have an accident shrouded in all kinds of controversy and finger-pointing before we become proactive about how to manage this sort of exotic information? I hope not. Unfortunately, it just seems to be the way we do business.
And it'll all be written off as another weather anomaly.
Yeah.
That's the new swamp gas, I think.
I think you're right. That's a very good point.
Billy Cox, it's a pleasure once again to spend time with you.
Thank you, Errol.
You have said to me privately, well, I don't know very much, but you're a very knowledgeable guy who doesn't have a very high opinion about what he does know.
Well, I feel like I'm doing 101 here, where there are people, as you know, such as yourself even, who are on the
PhD
level.
I'm still at the 101 level myself. I've only been involved since, what, 94 on a regular basis. There are so many people out there who know so much more than me. My difficulty is being a geezer and brain farting. I can't remember things.
I'm glad you said that, not me.
Yeah. It's being on the radio live and not being able to recall things. I know it, and I'm a good producer. I know where to lay my hands on it, given time.
Right.
And I'm sure you're the same way. There's just so much information going through you that you haven't been directly involved with, unlike a lot of the old-time researchers like Richard Hall and Stan Friedman and, dare I say, he's not so old, Jerome Clark. They all retain all of this stuff.
See, I can't do that. I have a brain like a colander. I mean, it just completely leaks all over the place. I have to have a cheat sheet.
Thank you, Billy Cox, for being on, and thank you for your, however peripheral you might feel it is, thank you for the work that you've been doing over the years. It helps to spread the word.
Well, you know what they say, you only need to get lucky once, right?
Yes. Oh, what a lot of karma is building up for turning on people to UFOs and aliens and abductions.
They're not going away.
No. Billy, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Errol.
We'll talk soon.
All right, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
I really like all of the regular contributors to this program. We've had Dave Verlott, and we've had Mike Woods. And now, this side of Billy Cox, here comes from his home down there in Enterprise, Alabama, Alfred Lemberg. Good day to you, sir. I thought you might come out with the old fog whistle.
You know, actually, I have been remiss with that, haven't I?
Yeah, somewhat.
You know, maybe it's something whose time has passed.
Yeah, maybe.
Perhaps.
Maybe. It just confuses podcast listeners because they're not really sure what the hell it's all about.
It's all about the history, folks.
And I'm sorry, listeners, that I brought it up, but during the old radio program version, Days of Strange Days Indeed, Alfred would always close out with his Alabama fog whistle, which is only a whistle and not a horn.
And it was a genuine 18th century contrivance, too. Which really made it kind of special.
There's nothing like colliding rowboats. Let's talk about Furry, since I just brought his name up.
Great suffering and most baragrugous zot, stars and Sputniks. Kenneth Arnold, solved. I mean, what a concept, huh? And we have Mr. Verlott to thank for bringing the wisdom and the incisive wit that is one Mr. Rimmer from Great Britain.
Yes. Lord, every time I see one of his submissions for the updates list, I think, oh, I hope it's going to be something sensible, and inevitably, it's not.
Well, forgetting for a moment that John Rimmer is the devil we know. And if we got to have a representative of such that he is, I'm glad it's him. I'm glad he's the one. The point I've always had with Rimmer, and that is his constant desire to go back to the very beginning of something and imply, at least get a suspicion of a false positive, so he can make the whole ufological panoply go away, is my impression. I find that irritating and tedious as time goes on. Just suffice to say that I get a little disappointed with Mr. Rimmer as more and more as time goes on. And frankly, his lack of intellectual courage just repulses me. As those who would belittle UFOs and invalidate them for reasons of pushing them away for their lack of courage to stare this thing in the face a little bit, which is what I think it was deserved. Point being is I was just starting to feel a little warm and fuzzy about John Rimmer, and those hopes are dashed. But with regard to Furlot, his top 10 reasons why Rimmer had bupkis there is just they weren't a top 10 list of reasons so much as they were succinct hammer blows, okay? And
yes,
they really pounded the snot out of really specious arguments, and obviously not joking Zimmer additionally into the ground with some efficiency and great artistry, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like a golf claps, if you can hear that.
Yes, we can.
Very, very nicely done. And I can appreciate Mr. Rimmer's rendition of his fast Pelicans that had to have been flying over the mountain range that day for Kenneth Arnold to take them for UFOs, but, you know, sometimes those Pelicans can really truck.
Perhaps you'd care to incorporate Dave Furlot's top 10 into one of your columns for UFO magazine.
You know, that's not a bad idea. I will have to ponder that and meditate on same.
Hell, it is your column. You can do what you want.
Yeah.
Well, having sung Dave Furlot's praises, how about Mike Woods?
Right off the bat, in all caution, and with all respect to Mr. Woods, who I have a high degree of respect and appreciation for, is that with regards to Jeff Rintz, okay, we just might be shooting the piano player a little more than we need to. And you got to take into account and remember that Mike Woods, a well-respected gentleman in his own right who has admitted himself that politically he's pretty much to the right of Attila the Hun. You know, he may not be the best man to ascribe the political proclivities and sensitivities of others. Mayhaps, perhaps, possibly, perchance, nesta.
To use your piano player analogy, most piano players play what they want to play.
Okay, I appreciate that, but maybe in this case the piano player is trying to play what the Constitution guarantees can be played.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah, Woods said he really thought that at one time that Rintz.com was one of the best UFO reporting sites on the Internet, and my contention and suspicion and what I offer here is that that may be still true, and I mean that sincerely. It's not so much that Rintz.com is a sounding board for brown shirters and knee-jerk conspiracy buffs, but Jeff Rintz suspects, kind of like I do, that even the most repellent and outre of us should be able to avail ourselves of our right to free speech, and without regard to the repellence of those individuals or their thinking, because that free speech is now more free to be freely criticized, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's kind of the whole point. It's thought exposed, and it's thought revealed for commentary and criticism in a marketplace of ideas, and you let the cream rise to the top. But you need some of that crap in the cream to provide the weight sinking to the bottom that pushes other stuff up to the top, you know? So you kind of let things float by their own devices. Let me finish this up real quick by saying I personally have known Jeff Rintz for about 10 years, and he's a conservative of the old constitutional variety, but still, he's been fair, he's been firm, and he's been friendly with this yellow dog liberal, and that to a degree of fairness and firmness and friendliness that he's extended to me like few others have, and that includes yourself, Mr. Bruce Knapp. He's the caliber of you and me, and I think what I can do is just give Rintz some real credit for intelligence and efficacy of character and being that true American original that he's been called and like I aspire to be and like I think you are, Harold Boosnap.
Yeah, the only difference between the three of us is I'm not an American.
Well, that caliber of individual, I mean, we're all citizens
yes.
of the world. Hell, I'm from the Orion Arm in the Milky Way galaxy. That's my address. But really, I think Jeff's been a force for good and really an imperfect world. And it remains still that Jeff Rintz brought us the report, which we are going to talk about, what Woodsy went into regarding that strange video.
Yes, he did. But apparently it was elsewhere and was picked up by Rintz.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All the previous said on that. I'll tell you, man, that Woods really has kind of an interesting take on the whole thing with regard to that footage, and it's got quite a lot of schadenfreude in it, quite a bit of laughing up your sleeve at someone else's misfortune a little bit. Like by his own admission, no answers and just a whole lot of questions about the whole thing.
Yes, and the bickering that's going on between the individuals who are involved in the publication of that footage.
Which might give an indication still of its veracity if they're willing to fight that bitterly over it. Honking huge, enormous things in space. Mike Woods intimated that it was a new concept of how these new things could be in space and how they could be there and where did they come from. But huge, honking, enormous things in space is not a new concept. Consider Jim Mars wrote Alien Agenda years ago about bona fide and reported stuff, huge satellites parked in orbit, leaving orbit, arriving in orbit, doing all sorts of crazy things in the 50s. On top of that, there are the fast walkers that were seen by Aerojet General satellites and that NASA reported on with some circumspection and seen by them as reported by Jacques Vallée. That's startling stuff, man.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that with regard to that footage that we were just talking about, that it took a clown, Dan Aykroyd, to spearhead that into the public consciousness, because I would probably have never seen that little bit of footage that we had been denied, but for Dan Aykroyd putting a spear point on that thing that Sarita made. Woodsy was talking about paranoia and perhaps that some paranoias aren't justified, but I'll tell you what, man, my experience has been that where the threat is real, there is no paranoia. There is only good sense. He has one point about the footage concerning the huge structures in space. Those photographs he has of helicopters swooping around his residence is weird, and that would be weird right here in Fort Rucker, where we have similar helicopters of a similar type flying around all the time. That's just weird behavior for a helicopter. With regard to Mr. Billy Cox, let me just say from the outset that I am completely 100% impressed with the guy, even as I am reluctant to consider him the lone gunman in the mainstream media, the not unfriendly mainstream media, I don't know, media association we could have going on there. Maybe he could be our mole in the mainstream, you know, dare I say?
yeah, but moles tend to be underground and
double agents.
He doesn't work for a huge newspaper down there in Sarasota, Florida. He's not exactly underground.
Oh, well, see, I prefer to think that he's been employed by the CIA to spy on Strange Days Indeed and the whole virtual Strange Network.
Ooh, well, that's
He does seem like a really impressive guy, and I'm just blown away by everything he's written, a cogency and a concern you don't see anywhere else from his part of the woods, so to speak.
He's a very astute man who suddenly appeared on the scene several years ago, and I had him on the broadcast version of his program several years ago, and he has just evolved into one of the perceptive and strongest writers out there in the media about UFOs.
He writes with such a sincerity and competence that you just don't see from his ilk. And some of the things that he talks about, some of the points that he brings up, too, that what a brave man. UFOs are ripe for mainstream journalistic expression. Statements like that are brave at the least, don't you think?
Very much so, yes.
He talked about flawed logics creating barriers between mainstream media and exotic subjects. And I was really hoping that he would go into what he thought some of those flawed logics might have been, and he didn't. Well, I was thinking in terms of maybe it was one of the rubrics you always hear, like extraordinary claims requiring extraordinary evidence. I think that might be almost as ridiculous as saying, does a mundane claim require only mundane evidence? It seems to me like you can't have Peter without Paul.
And yeah.
The point he made about every time we have a great incident in ufology, there is some press conference, but there's virtually no follow-up. after that, and he allowed as he really didn't know why that was. And I was reminded of a situation with regard to crop circles, some of these really spectacular designs that have been made. How is it that they have not been duplicated as proof that they are in fact being made by the hands of man?
There have been a couple of groups who said, we're going to make one and we'll tell you where it is.
And they have, and they made them, and I'll tell you, you know, I mean, I was fairly unimpressed. He mentioned the cult of the UFO, and it was with regard to something he was quoting. Was it Parade Magazine?
Yes, Parade Magazine did a recent article.
And still dismissive at the last when he pointed out that he's talking about the cult of the UFO being satisfied. And he allowed to say, okay, what is the cult of the UFO? An implied ufological ghetto of other ghetto fringe subjects. He made the very, very interesting point. This was the Parade people that did it, but Cox highlighted it, was what keeps ufology or the cult of the UFO going is not the testimony of respected witnesses so much, but the really spacious and incompetent denials of the officials reporting on it. That blew me away. And further on in that article where Kucinich is dismissed as a buff, derisively, but then the critic in his own way indicates that he's knowledgeable and in effect a buff in his own right. Little craziness like that in the reporting of UFOs and the malfeasance of the mainstream in their lack of real desire to accomplish same.
I noticed that the Tribune group of newspapers, one out of Los Angeles and the other out of Chicago, of course, have both covered in some detail what's been going on ufologically speaking in the last few weeks.
It does seem that we get these periodic reviews. Back to Billy Cox, he had a little discussion there about some of the reasons we might be getting more people coming forward and admitting their testimony to different things that they may have been involved with in the past, from Aztec to Roswell to Cash Landrum to whatever it is. It's about old school patriots honoring old oaths and how there's some guys that are probably still holding true to those oaths that they took. And if I could take a moment to remind them that the conditions and the situations and what was going on then perhaps dictated those oaths, but some serious reevaluation of them should be made now. And if you do have anything at all to contribute or report to this unsettling and startling thing that we're all interested in, please come forward and let us know. The truth is always better. His contention that it was difficult to write for UFOs where he was because a local UFO angle is required. It's my contention, and I think an argument could be made, that UFOs occurring anywhere in the world in a quality report is a local occurrence as far as UFOs are concerned. Mm-hmm. So, man, we really should be talking about them and not use that as an excuse of why UFOs shouldn't be talked about. After all, it was pointed out later that any time mainstream media wants to bump up their ratings, they always throw a UFO log on the fire.
And whenever silly season comes along and there ain't no real hard news, then look at what the Chicago Tribune did.
Yeah.
Yeah, back on January the 1st of last year, 2006.
I was pleased that Billy Cox made mention of the tether incident. We had an experiment on the space shuttle where we unreeled this, tens of miles long, this tether with a satellite contrivance instrument on the end of it. Do you have any idea how long that thing was reeled out? Seems like it might have been something like 30 miles or something like that.
That tether was 20 kilometers in length and less than a centimeter in diameter, and objects were seen behind the tether between 140 and 180 kilometers.
Indicating huge size.
Exactly.
Was dismissed as ice particles and dust around the camera lens and blah, 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 humna, humna, humna. And whatever you saw on mainstream news kind of bore that out, these real nebulous, poorly focused things kind of floating around in the camera, around the tether The point being is that what you saw on mainstream television could have been dust and ice particles, perhaps, but I recently saw some extended footage of that that showed all the little bits and spots that you didn't see on mainstream television, and you see some of these dust particles and these weirdly nefarious disc-shaped things with apparent notches and center holes punched in them, strange-looking things. But the point is, they're going behind the tether, which is very long and glowing like a fluorescent tube because of the electrical exchanges and stuff. And you see these disks go behind that tether, indicating they might be 4 or 5 miles in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crazy stuff.
And those disks are not camera lens or camera CCD artifacts.
Well, no, they aren't in the first place, and they can't be in as much as they demonstrably, no mistake, no stretch at all, listener, behind the tether.
Yes.
Oh, the startling footage. And my point is, if you had seen that footage on CNN and ABC and NBC and CBS and M&M's, there would have been a hue and a cry. Billy Cox was talking about, with regard to a top-level journalistic cadre, that don't know the difference between an outright fantasy reflected in their call to have Schwarzenegger come back and have Terminator save us from the bad aliens.
No, please.
But their contention, and this is a top-level journalistic cadre that doesn't know the difference between that, okay, an obvious fantasy, and a ufological phenomenon, evidenced by 6 categories of quality evidence from the physical to the anecdotal and over a period of years and for perhaps many thousands of them. That's the level of idiocy that only has to be directed. They're intelligent men. They can't have that idiocy in and of themselves. Something else, too, with regard to the Larry King treatment of UFOs and ufology, which at this point is still pretty much eh. Nothing really damaging, but, oh, come on, give it a rest. Mr. Cox, maybe it was yourself that indicated that it was also on the Anderson 360 show and kind of an indicator that it's getting some kind of mainstream attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to disagree a little bit and say, no, no points for Anderson's 360. The guy sniggered. He used the funny music, tried to put a negative spin on it.
Plus, that foolish man McGahey was on there, too.
I had a whole thing I was going to go into about him, but he's been beat up so bad here, I was going to give him a spot of not even mentioning him, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But where Mr. Cox and I might differ a little bit, you know, and respectfully, is his contention as a member of the mainstream, okay? So, I mean, he's got irons in the fire, and I can appreciate that. But his contention that media doesn't take orders from government. And I can appreciate that. Media, perhaps, doesn't take orders from government, but that kind of naively suggests that both the government and the media don't take orders from their corporate catbirds either. I thought Mr. Cox was being just a tiny bit naive there, that maybe if he would try to look at it from a little further out, maybe he and I could agree more.
Perhaps Billy is a little concerned that somebody might hear this podcast, and had he not put that disclaimer in there, who knows what sort of negative effect it might have. And I'm not suggesting that is the way it is, but it potentially could be.
I can't agree more, and it certainly doesn't detract from my appreciation for him. Consider that the wire services have been, and who's to say they are not now, in cahoots with the CIA or probably with the NSA, and he did allow that there was much going on in the offices above him that he was not privy to.
Of course, you know? Yes. In the same way that this connection between CNN and the CIA, which might explain a lot of the McGahey-isms that crop into UFO coverage on CNN.
Mm-hmm. His report that he was out walking next to some property owned by NASA and apparently saw something that he called metaphysical out there for a while and then talked about how it was more paranormal. Didn't it sound pretty much like a UFO to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So my point is this, is that he has seen a UFO. He's doomed.
Once you've seen one and you have no logical, as far as you're concerned, explanation for what you've seen, then that's it.
Yeah.
You would be dubbed, should you come out and tell people about it, a believer or a saucer head or a tinfoil hat wearer or a guy who sees little green men.
Or little gray men.
And other pejoratives.
It would certainly explain his very rational and sincere interest, wouldn't it?
Would too.
And for my part, I hope that he doesn't succumb to that Mothman futility mechanism that I'm always going on about, where he's seen something odd, he wants to make a competent and cogent report on it, that he would chase it to some point where it would damage him, and I hope it doesn't damage him or any of us. But I sure appreciate his courage for especially doing what he's doing and where he is, going out to have the real look.
And I certainly appreciate him being around, as I said to him, because there aren't many Billy Coxes out there who are on, ending quotation marks, on our side.
Well, the one, pretty much. Haven't we got that pretty much figured? Something else he said that was very interesting, too, is he was in kind of at the ground floor of the Cash Landrum thing. That being the case, there's a story there that needs to be told, and I got every indication from Mr. Cox he had the story to tell.
We shall see what transpires on his blog, Alfred.
Let's see, what else have we got on Mr. Cox here? Problem issues should be addressed by the status quo. I think he made indication of that, that there are problem issues in this milieu, in this area, in this genre that needs some addressing, and the status quo is remiss in its job and its responsibilities not to be accomplishing same, huh?
There is much about the status quo that really does need to be changed, and not just in its approach or lack thereof to UFOs.
Maybe widen the beam, widen the field. You know, there's some talk about focusing and getting more scientific. But then I started looking into the new Graham Hancock book, Supernatural, and the point there is that there might be every indication that we should widen the focus into some of these other areas of, I'm reluctant to call them drug inducements, because there seems to be something beyond that going on in this area that, I mean, quality people have been talking about for an extended period of time. Case in point, Billy Cox. He said he was peripheral to what's going on. I suggest that maybe he's not so peripheral.
He's become part of the mainstream.
Right. He's a reminder that you only need to get lucky once. That was a phrase that he used. And that reminded me that with regard to UFOs, only one of those stories, only one, has to be true. And boom, it's a whole new ballgame.
And I'm actually quite surprised that other radio programs, other podcasts, haven't picked up on him.
He's a quality mainstream. He's the mainstream that I would like to have, the way I wish West Wing, that Aaron Sorkin television program, was the White House I wished I'd had.
Always good, Alfred, and look forward to the next time.
Hasta la vista, mein Herr.
Hasta la vista, Alfred Lemberg, down there.
Hey, wait a minute, let me get that.
Thank you, Alfred Lindbergh, for both your input and your Alabama fog whistle. Bye.
Bye.
And that's this edition of Strange Days Indeed, number 452. My thanks to Dave Frelott, Mike Woods, Billy Cox, and Alfred Lemberg. Next time on Strange Days Indeed, abductee author Katarina Wilson will be our featured guest. I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks for being out there. Thanks for subscribing. And thank you for listening. Until next time, bye.
That's this edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network.